Welcome to the Fantasy NASCAR Podcast. I am Pierce Dietrich. At Race for the Prize is the Twitter place where you can find me not tweeting. And fanvice.com is bringing you this podcast. If you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever, maybe you're on the fanvice.com website, check out fanvice.com. I guess you're already there. And look up the free fantasy sports content and then the fantasy sports content in the other sports that may cost money and stuff. So we're going to talk about Bristol this week. You might remember the original Bristol race from earlier this year. Probably not. They raced a little bit on Sunday, and then they ended up running Monday afternoon around 1 or 2 o'clock. So if you have a job, then you probably didn't get to watch much of the race. Sorry about your luck. The race will be on Saturday night, so your job probably shouldn't get in the way of it. So that's cool. That's great. So if you don't remember the race, I'm going to go over kind of the way that it's going to go, and I'm going to go over each driver point-wise from the spring race and break it down that way. Bristol is, I mean, we all know, it's a short track. It's high-banked. It's pretty crazy. And it's probably more crazy than it's been in previous years. And the reason why it's a little more crazy now is they've really done their best to create two racing grooves. And they've done a pretty good job at it. I'm the first person to yell at the tracks and say NASCAR's dead. But one of the places where using the track bite and, you know, creating a multiple groove racetrack is Bristol. It works. The Highline works, which a lot more drivers are using now. If you went back to 2016, if you go back to 2017, not a lot of the drivers were using the new or using the high groove. You had Ricky Stenhouse Jr., you had Kyle Larson, you had Jimmy Johnson, and some other drivers would explore up there, but not everybody. Most still wanted to stick on the bottom. Well, now everyone is kind of using different grooves at different times, and they're really experimenting. Kyle Larson definitely prefers to run up top. Ricky Stenhouse prefers to run up top. Whereas you get guys like Kyle Busch who prefer to run the bottom groove. And you got a bunch of different choices and people run it differently. It makes for really interesting racing, but it also leads to a lot of wrecks. Why is that? Well, let's take, for example, Ricky Stenhouse, or not Ricky Stenhouse, but I mean, hell, we could always take Ricky Stenhouse when we're talking about wrecks. But I want to look at, let's say Kyle Larson is about to lap the field. So Kyle Larson and Kyle Busch. So they're running first and second. And they're, well, not lapping the field, but because you're constantly lapping people, but they're coming up on lap traffic. Now, you're a lapper, and you're saying, oh, I got Larson coming up on me. I'm going to do the right thing, which is I'm going to stay on the bottom, because Larson likes to be on the top, so you allow him to go. Well, then Kyle Busch comes up, and you're like, oh, wait, he likes to be on the bottom, so I need to make sure I go to the top. Oh, by the way, I'm trying to look out my front windshield and drive the damn race, not look in my mirror and say, oh, wait, this guy goes high, this guy goes low. It's all over the place, and that causes wrecks. We saw Ryan Blaney get caught up in a wreck. He scored a ton of hog points. Well, he didn't score a ton because he wasn't in the race long enough. But he got caught up in someone else's mess because they're just all over the track. And that's when they're spread out. Imagine what it's like when they're running tight together on restart. There was a wreck, what, three laps into the race that ruined Truex's day. It ruined Michael McDowell's day, who had a pretty decent car. It ruined Chase Elliott's day. All of them. Bristol is pretty unforgiving, and you can have lineups get chewed up pretty fast. You probably don't want to go overweight on someone because the likelihood of someone wrecking, I mean, it's just really high. You would really want to spread your lineups out, even though I don't think I did. I think I went pretty heavy on Kyle Larson and Kyle Busch, and it worked out, but got lucky. Really, that's probably not the smartest thing to do. Another thing about the racing, and I'm watching the race right now, well, there's a couple things that we'll talk about. The high groove really launches off, and that's nothing new. It's been like that for some time. Drivers like Kyle Busch like to run the low line eventually, but on the restart, being on the outside is the fastest, and you're going to launch away from the second-place car. The bottom groove is going to stack up. Eventually, as the race gets going and the track bites, so one of the issues they had in the spring race was it was so cold. You'll remember it was snowing, it was freezing, it was sleeting at times, and it really needs that bottom groove to heat up for two or three laps, or even sometimes longer for it to really have speed on the long run. One of the reasons that Kyle Busch, it took him forever really to take over the race was because he preferred the bottom groove and it just wouldn't get going, whereas the upper groove would really, really was the fastest from the very beginning. You look at last year in the fall, Erik Jones started in the preferred groove every time, with Kyle Busch starting on the inside every time, and Jones led half of the damn race. And anytime they went down the pit road, I mean, Jones had the number one pit stall, so he almost was always going to launch off of pit road with the lead at a racetrack where those pit stalls are huge because they pit in different spots and they got to drive all the way around the track to get out. So if you have the number one pit stall, huge advantage. And he had that, and having the number one spot on a restart is enormous as well. So the top line is going to launch. It's kind of like what we just witnessed at Michigan. The top groove at Michigan on restarts launches. The bottom groove at Michigan and at Bristol, it checks up. They can't get going as fast. And so if you start on the outside, you're gaining three or four spots. And if you're starting on the bottom, you're like a slug in quicksand and you lose spots. An interesting story would be Joey Logano late in the Bristol race from the spring. This was on the Door Bumper Clear podcast. TJ Majors miscounted. So we know at Martinsville and also at Michigan, coming off of pit road, they count cars because you want to start on a specific groove. You want to be on the was it Bristol? Was it Martinsville? I'm pretty sure it was it was Bristol. And so TJ Majors miscounted cars off of pit road at the end and ended up putting his driver, Joey Logano, on the inside. And so Logano ended up finishing ninth, whereas he probably could have had a top five finish, but the spotter said, "Oh no, you're good," and he miscounted the cars, and so he ended up starting on the wrong side. That's huge. Now, it's not as big of a deal. It's probably a bigger deal at Michigan. Because in Michigan, there's going to be a lot more cars in the lead lap, and we're going to see a lot of cars that probably don't deserve to score a lot of points end up doing it that way. But at Bristol, you know, when we get late in the race and we see guys like Joey Logano, well, he deserved to be there. Or we see like Alex Bowman. Someone's going to look at Alex Bowman and say, "God, how the hell did Alex Bowman finish fifth? He must have got lucky at the end." Sure, he got lucky a little bit at the end because he started on the preferred groove. But hey, you don't run in ninth place for 500 laps. That's not luck. You don't run up front at Bristol. You have to be good. You have to have a good car to stay up front at Bristol that long. So, but at Michigan, that's not really the case. When you turn in 200 laps, it's intermediate track. It's pretty much full throttle. And then we get these cautions at the end. And you get a little bit lucky and you can get that boost. And so you get lineups at Michigan that are much more like, "Oh God, what kind of fish play is that?" Whereas at Bristol, it's pretty smart. I mean, if you would have put Alex Bowman in your lineup in the spring race, and I believe he was in the optimal, I might as well check this out. But if you did that, it was a gutsy call because he was starting eighth. And that was early in the season when you knew Alex Bowman was fine. Alex Bowman was around a 20th to 15th place driver every week. You would not have felt comfortable picking Alex Bowman early in his, you know, Hendrick career in that 88 car. If you did it, then more power to you. Was he in the optimal lineup? I'm pretty sure he was. He was. He was in the optimal lineup that led. He wasn't actually in the optimal lineup. He was in a lineup that scored 460 points and left $600 on the table. But the optimal lineup had Larson and Busch, obviously, Jimmy Johnson, Ryan Newman, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., and Landon Castle. Now, you could say maybe Newman was a little lucky. Newman was about to go a lap down, and he intentionally wrecked Kyle Larson, if you remember that one. Come on. I'm always reminding you of that. Yeah. And, Newman's tough to pass. That's one thing. You know, if Newman being tough to pass or to go a lap down, that's cool. But when you wreck the leader so that you stay in the lead lap, I would say that you probably should be penalized for that. You should be scored a lap down if you're asking me. But, hey, whatever. NASCAR makes the rules, so it goes. So, again, just some basics of the Bristol racetrack. Top groove's going to launch off. Some guys are going to the top. Some guys are going to run the bottom throughout. I can see it's going to be a night race. It'll be a little bit cooler, but it is the middle of summer. So both lanes should come in. I would imagine Kyle Busch would be a little bit better in this race. But again, it depends on where he starts. But in his words, he kept describing with the crazy weather, it was really hard for his car to get going on the bottom groove, and he really needed some long runs. And we didn't get a lot of long runs. I'm watching the race now. It's lap 22, and I want to say the majority of these laps in this race have been run under caution. I think it's the second caution already. A lot of cautions in that race. I kept starting and stopping and starting and stopping, and couldn't get a long groove. Really couldn't help Kyle Busch out. Kyle Larson was clearly, though, the best driver, and I would expect for him to do well in this race. There's a lot of guys that could perform well. Ryan Blaney was a monster, and he was a guy that I had almost no exposure to in that race, which this was after I'd already been burned by Martinsville. So I got really burned there. And then I kind of increased my ownership. After that, I said, you know what, I got to play Blaney on certain weeks because he's got something. And then he's gone on really to do nothing. Since then, he's been okay. But you look at that Martinsville race, you look at the Bristol race, even the Texas race where he was running really well and got hit with a pit road penalty. He was really good early in the season. He's been okay since then. But you would have expected him to take maybe a couple more steps forward. So let's go back and let's look at the Bristol race from the spring, back in April it was, and just evaluate the drivers and try to think what could they do. So you got Kyle Larson, who scores the most points, 104 Hulk points, 50 laps led, 54.5 fast lap points, for a total of 150 points, average running position of third. So he was up front in the mix the entire time, and it makes sense. Bristol is his favorite racetrack. He's never won at Bristol, but he's come very close. Should have won this race. He ended up finishing second, if my memory serves me correctly, at the very end, after the last pit stop. So so there's a caution, I believe, with about 25 laps left. I probably should just go ahead and double-check that, since I can. I'm pretty sure that at this Bristol race, there was a caution with something like 20 laps left. And I'm trying to type in Racing Reference Bristol, and I typed in Rasseboog Verstikkel. That's Rasseboog Verstikkel. How did I Racing Reference Bristol? My keyboarding skills have always been terrible, but they have really disintegrated over the last 3 or 4 years. I don't know if I should be concerned about that or not. Yeah, there was a caution, and we finished with a 22-lap run. So before that caution on lap 471, 71 green flag laps, and Kyle Larson was absolutely in control, and the race was over. Kyle Larson had a huge lead on Kyle Busch. Well, it wasn't huge, but it was big enough that Kyle Busch wasn't going to catch him. And then they have the caution, and apparently something happened. They tightened up Kyle Larson too much. Kyle Busch catches him, and Kyle Busch wins, as he always does. When Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson are running one and two, it doesn't matter. We know that Kyle Busch is going to finish first, and Kyle Larson is going to finish second. That seems to always be the story. Doesn't matter fantasy-wise, though. They both scored a ton of points. Kyle Busch scores 104 fantasy points, 29 fast laps, 29.25 laps led. As I mentioned, he could have probably scored more, but because of the weather, it took him a good bit of time before he really got up front and really took control of the race. If you were like right now, I'm looking lap 32, Kyle Busch is in 10th. And if you are anything like me, you're like, I know it's a long race. I know there's 125 laps in stage one, which is awesome, and there's 500 laps to go, but you're nervous. And there was definitely a reason to be nervous because he could not get the lower groove working early in the race, could not find the speed. And you can see a bunch of drivers that are kind of searching around, trying to run the middle, trying to run high. Some are trying low. Yeah, they're kind of all over the place. Your third place car in terms of fantasy wise. So one and two, one is Kyle Larson on the scoreboard. Two is Busch on the scoreboard. You can flip those for the actual race finish. Then you got Kevin Harvick, who, if you remember, started in the very back, failed inspection. So again, that made it really interesting when you were building your lineups, because you got Larson, who is a stud, was starting close to the front. You got Kyle Busch on the damn pole, so how are you going to pass up on Kyle Busch? And then you got Kevin Harvick starting 39th. So one theory is, you know, when you're building lineups, like, well, hell, there's three guys. I just have to simply put them in my lineup. But that wasn't the case because of the way it shaked up. Because, I mean, Harvick wasn't really cheap. And normally, I mean, if it was an intermediate track race, of course. If it's Charlotte, of course, even though that didn't work. You have to, because there aren't a lot of hog points available. And two guys probably could take those hog points, or, you know, you don't need Kevin Harvick to get hog points because there's less hog points available, so place differential points becomes more valuable. At Bristol, there's a lot of hog points available, and that means place differential becomes less valuable. And when you're spending $11,500 for a guy who's probably not going to get very many hog points, he's probably, I mean, he's going to get you 30 place differential points, but actually doesn't end up being a very good point per dollar play. Kevin Harvick, I mean, he was good. 6.9 FPPK. That's really, really good. That's unbelievable to think that he's not in the optimal lineup. No, he's not, because you've got other drivers who can also scrape away some haul points. Jimmy Johnson, 7.7. Ryan Newman, 7.1. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., 7.2. Alex Bowman, 6.8. David Reagan, 8.0. Landon Castle, 7.2. All these guys make it pretty easy to build a pretty solid lineup. Still, I am a little surprised. I mean, because Kevin Harvick didn't just get place differential points, and he didn't just get a solid finish. Well, he needed to do a little bit more, and he did start in the very back, and he dealt with damage, and that hurt his car a little bit, and that hurt his movement through the field, and it probably stopped him from getting more hog points than he should have. He finished seventh. If he could have finished a little bit more, I mean, a top five, top four, maybe, if he doesn't quite get all that damage, he had 10.5 fast lap points. That's only 4% of the fast lap points that were available. Only 4%. And that's not really a stretch to say, you know what, I think Kevin Harvick can get 4% of the fast lap points. So he gets 10 points there. He gets 32 place differential points. The damn guy scored 79.5 points. And he's not in the optimal lineup. I mean, I can rationalize how that happened. I can get it. I get it. But I still really don't get it, though. I mean, the best lineup was Larson, Busch. But then you skip Harvick. You go to Jimmy Johnson, had the fourth most fantasy points. Johnson started the race 17th. He ended up finishing third, which isn't a surprise if you've been following Jimmy Johnson. Well, I mean, this is where he wins now. Twilight of his career. Oh, no. He won last year at the spring race at Dover. He won last year the spring race at Bristol. Those are his last two victories. We all know these. Always, was he at 10, 11 wins at Dover, the high-banked concrete track that's almost exactly like Bristol? Of course. And he raced really well. But he never quite had enough. Like, he could get up to third place, but he could never, ever really do anything to Kyle Busch. He could not run with Kyle Busch. He could not run with Kyle Larson. They were just completely in a different league. He was good. He was definitely the third best car. And that is exactly where he stopped, though. That's where he plateaued. So you put him in third. You give him the 14 place differential points. And then you add 13 fast lap points. Again, that's not crazy to say, hey, you know what? Jimmy Johnson can get 5% of the fast lap points. He's fast. He's good at Bristol. Why can't he get those points? And he was relatively affordable. Ryan Newman starts 30th, finishes 10th. It's not really a fluke. Now, did he benefit from spinning out Larson? Sure. But in the grand scheme of things, say he goes a lap down right there, he still hangs around. Now, does he gain some spots at the end, which he clearly did by finishing 10th? He probably isn't quite the home run, and it does change the dynamic, but he was a 15th place car, not to throw any hate towards Ryan Newman at all. He definitely was a 15th place car in that race. Did he benefit? Yeah, but there are all kinds of little breaks that happen in every single race. And when you have a race with 40 cars on the track, when there's 500 laps, there are a lot of ways a race can break in your favor or not in your favor. You can catch five breaks and then have six breaks go against you. I mean, a lot of times we think of these races like, oh, it was one thing that hurt this guy. And that is the case a lot of times at an intermediate track. You mean, you're just doing you're having your business and running your race, and the fuel guy can't get enough damn fuel in your car. So that's the one break that goes against you. And that usually is the situation at an intermediate track or these other tracks where it is one thing. We go to a short track where there are 500 laps and you're making 1,000 passes. There are so many things that go right and so many things that go wrong that we can't keep track of them. We don't even know that they happen. We just know when the camera is on them. And so we focus on that moment when Ryan Newman spins Kyle Larson as he's passing, and we say, oh, that son of a bitch. Well, that's not, I mean, what else went in his favor? What else didn't go in Ryan Newman's favor? And I say, well, look at the lie. At the end, he was in a good position. I guarantee you started on the outside lane, and he got a heck of a restart. Well, how many times did Ryan Newman probably have to start on the bottom and also lose spots? So it's really hard to start playing that game. It's very difficult. And we try to do it because in other fantasy sports, we can really see everything. In baseball, you can see every pitch. You know exactly where it goes. You can track the speed of it. You can track the exit velocity. We can know every single thing that happens in every single moment. It's crazy. With football, you can look at the all 22 camera and you can really see where the defenses are and you can see everything and you can know, like, hey, did people get lucky? Is this player really good? Is this player really running really fast? Does he make exceptional catches? In basketball, you can see the entire game on the screen. You know exactly what's happening and what's not happening. In racing, although we can watch everyone participate at once, one of the tricky things with football is you've got seven games going on at once and you can't watch every single game at once. And in baseball, you've got 16 or 15 games happening all at the same moment. You can't watch every single pitch of every single game. But in racing, you're watching all the competitors in one event. The problem, which really they could find tons of ways to fix this, but you got one camera and you get to watch two or three drivers on the screen. So even though we're watching everyone compete in the same event, which you would think, hey, that's cool, man. There's no other fantasy sport that's like this where I can watch the whole contest at once on one screen. Well, not really, because in baseball, you only need camera on the pitcher and the batter, and you can see all the action. In racing, there are 40 different races going on, or, well, I mean, however you want it, 39 races. Each car is racing each car, but yet you only get to see two or three cars racing each other. The rest are not on the screen. And so in that way, it's almost worse. It's almost the worst fantasy sport, because at least in football or in baseball, you can set up multiple TVs and you can watch every single game if you want to try to do it. It's not a problem. But in racing, you only get what they give you. And I know you can log on to NBC Sports and look at their like three cameras they give, but those three cameras online are garbage. And a lot of the cameras they give you are in-car cameras, which were cool in 2002. But they're not cool anymore. It's not really that exciting having a camera on somebody's damn helmet. It is not that cool watching a race from someone's bumper. It's neat to go to that for a second, but I don't want to watch a whole race. What I need is about four or five cameras showing all the action at once, and I can watch those four or five cameras. But I can't. So it really is that, like, NASCAR is in the dark ages when we talk about television production. I know they win Emmys and they talk them up, but if you talk about a true sports fan who really loves racing, all you get to watch are the damn leaders. And when the leader pulls away, all you get to watch is the eighth car running against the ninth place car. What about the rest? What about the rest of the field? Give it to me as an option. Give me the opportunity to watch all of the races. If there are 40 cars, I want to have a chance to watch racing between every single one of them, just like I can watch every game of football or every pitch in baseball. Can't do that in NASCAR. All right. I don't even know where I am anymore. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. ran up front all day. Started fourth. Probably scared the death out of people. But again, you would think, if you thought Kevin Harvick could get some fast laps, if you thought Ryan Newman did, I didn't think he would, if you thought Jimmy Johnson could get some fast laps, then you knew that Ricky Stenhouse Jr. has been very good at Bristol over his career. This is a good racetrack for Ricky Stenhouse Jr. You had to believe he could get 10 fast lap points, and he did. He got 15, and I'd say that's a low-end projection for him. You got to think that not a lot of drivers run the fast groove. And Ricky Stenhouse Jr. loves to be on an unconventional strategy. There are times where he'll be on four tires fresh and no one else is on tires. He goes on different cycles, and that leads to fast lap points. It could also lead to chaos and problems. But 15 fast lap points for Ricky Stenhouse Jr., when he's a guy that prefers to run the high groove before anyone else does, means he might find speed up there, or he might not deal with traffic as much. We see Kyle Larson piling up the fast lap points because of that. I think 15 fast lap points is a low projection for Ricky Stenhouse Jr. And when we go into this race this weekend, I would expect 15 fast lap points. And if you give me 15 points from him, and he's got an affordable price tag, even if he's starting up front, he's definitely in play. And he was in the optimal lineup. I got to double check that before I'm speaking out of school here. He was in the optimal lineup. Larson, Busch, Johnson, Newman, Stenhouse, Castle. Spends all $50,000, and it scores you 46.7.5. You wouldn't have wanted to do it, but guess what? When you build a lineup with Ricky Stenhouse Jr., you build a lineup with Landon Castle, you build a lineup with Ryan Newman, you're going to win the GPP all by yourself. So you have a great opportunity this weekend to be the sole winner. Now, is it going to be hard? Yeah, it is, because there's a lot of wrecks. If you had Chase Elliott, sorry about your luck. If you had Ryan Blaney, man, he was killing 34 hog points that didn't last long. If you had Kevin Harvick, yeah, he had a good day, but he wasn't optimal. If you, build a, it's not that crazy, folks. Let's look at it. Look at Kyle Larson. Was he fast in practice? Yeah, he's fast in practice, which sometimes you worry about, because you look at, but in practice three, Kyle Larson, 22 on a short run, 20 on a long run. You got to be careful with that. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., he was slow as can be in practice three, 26 on the short run, 16th on the long run. Do you remember? Have you remembered? Have you paid attention to Bristol practices in the past? Because if you're not watching practice and you're looking at the stat sheets, then you're going to miss this. What is it? In practice, Kyle Larson will run the high groove. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. will practice running in the high groove. Jimmy Johnson will do this as well, because they're preparing for the race. Now, in practice, you look at their lap times, they're slow. The high groove doesn't come in practice because not very many people are running it. And the high groove works in the race because you have a busy racetrack during the race. In practice, when there's not a lot of cars out there and you got a relatively cold track, the fastest way around is on the bottom. And that's why you see guys like Kyle Busch put up amazing times in practice, because he's running the bottom groove. He runs the fastest on the long run in practice three. And that's just 10 laps. You probably want to look at 20 laps, 30 laps if you got it. If you don't, don't worry about it anyway. You have an idea. We knew Kyle Busch was going to be fast. You don't need to see practice. Kyle Larson, you knew he was going to be fast. You didn't need to see practice. You probably should have known that Jimmy Johnson was going to be fast. You didn't need to see practice. Now, Ryan Newman, Stenhouse, Castle. Well, with Castle, you're just... That's a wing and a prayer type play. You hope the punt comes through. There's going to be a punt. You know you're going to need to punt, because hell, sometimes you feel like you need to double punt. But you have to, and the reason why you have to double punt in this situation was because Harvick was priced too high and Kyle Larson was priced too low. And that's how that worked. But I wouldn't be surprised to double punt, but I know that I'm going to have to punt, because A, punts come through at Bristol because there's so many wrecks. There's just so many wrecks. It's just the way it is. There are a lot of big wrecks where multiple cars get collected because it's a small racetrack. It's a short racetrack. And you can't avoid the chaos. I looked over the stats in terms of multi-car wrecks, and it's pretty ridiculous. It's pretty ridiculous at Bristol. So guys aren't going to finish the race. So if you pick the punt that finishes the race, it's going to work. So you got to spray some punt love out there. And then you go to Newman, you go to Stenhouse. Again, Stenhouse, good at the track. You didn't really need to see his practice. I mean, you look at this, you reverse engineer this lineup, you could have won $50,000. Really, look, Larson, Busch, no problem. Jimmy Johnson, no problem again. Landon Castle, well, you're just hoping that that's the punt. Stenhouse, it makes sense. Did you have the guts to play it? No. Ryan Newman starting 30th. Come on, don't overthink it. Of course you're going to play it now. Well, he's $8,000, but it's Ryan Newman starting 30th. It's not that crazy. This is not that crazy of a lineup. Of course, hindsight's 20/20. Looks really easy right now, because you say, well, you know what? Jamie McMurray was starting 24th. I would have felt more comfortable with him. But maybe you wouldn't. Or actually, McMurray was starting 31st. But maybe you wouldn't, because Jamie McMurray, if you remember it, I'm sure you remember the spring with Jamie McMurray. Every single week, it didn't work. The only time it worked was Texas, but I think Texas was the next week. So up until this point, he just continued to burn you and burn you and burn you. I believe, if I've got my races in order. Either way, Jamie McMurray was a hot mess earlier in the year. But you may have went his way. At least not everybody would have jumped on the Ryan Newman bandwagon. Denny Hamlin started 25th. Eric Almirola started 19th. You would have leaned, well, you couldn't really afford those guys, I guess. I mean, it's not really that fair to put them in the same range. But hey, there it is. Anyway, the point is, the lineup doesn't look that crazy. If you put in your research, you probably could have built it. You probably could have thrown that thing together. All right, let's go back to the drivers. I was thinking, so obviously Larson, Busch, Harvick, Johnson, Newman, Stenhouse. All of those, I mean, the one that jumps out real quick, though, is Newman. I'm thinking, is Newman good at Bristol? I mean, I know I said he was a 15th place car, but has he trended well at Bristol in the past? So I want to look this up and figure out where old Ryan Newman is in terms of how's he been running lately at old Bristol. So he finished 6th last fall, 14th last spring. Then he had 28th in the 2016 fall, which, you know, it's fine. You're going to have your bad races. And then he's got a 9th, a 10th, a 5th. So I got, what, 6 of the last 7. He's had a top 15. 5 of the last 7, he has a top 10. It's probably better if I go further back, but that's pretty strong. I know Newman has struggled this year, but looks like this is a place where he's content. I mean, Newman's always had top 15 potential, and this year it's been he's incredibly disappointing, but he's getting kind of old. You know what, though? He has been halfway decent lately. That's crazy. I can't believe he's got, what, 3 top 10s? Well, one of those is Daytona. One of those is Pocono. I don't know. Maybe. What did he do at Dover? Oh, he wrecked. That's awesome. Sweet. Okay. All right, so let's go back to what they did at Dover or Bristol. Eric Almirola, as I mentioned before, he started 19th, but he finished 6th. That's a pretty good finish. Average position, though, 15th. So he definitely benefited from some late race restarts there. And one of the best ways, though, to find out, like, did this guy, was he fast? Was he not fast? You just look at fast lap points. If you're scoring fast laps at Bristol, you're doing something right. And he only had, what, 1.5 fast lap points. That's not really a lot. His average running position was 9 spots worse than his finish. Seems pretty lucky to me. It was a fine play because he was starting 19th. I think he'd been fine in cash because he finishes 10th, 15th, you're okay. But not optimal. He didn't end up being optimal. Alex Bowman, we talked about that, but Alex Bowman ran well. Average running position of 9th, 8.5 fast lap points. Alex Bowman was doing something right in this race, and he needs to be on your radar this weekend. He needs to be on your radar a lot more, and I'm guilty of this as well. Like, just go through Alex Bowman's results recently, and I went over this when I was writing my DraftKings rankings article, and he has 18 top 20s in 22 races. He has 7 top 10s in his last 10 races. Now, I'm recording this a little bit before a certain point, but whatever. The point is, Alex Bowman is doing a lot better than I realized. And he's probably racing a lot better than you realized. So keep your eye on Alex Bowman. Denny Hamlin, average running position of 13th, finishes 14th. See, this is one where I could really rack my mind around. Ah, now I remember. Okay, so Denny Hamlin was definitely the way that I went. I had Denny Hamlin in a lot of my life. Not a lot, but I had a decent amount of Denny Hamlin exposure. He was starting, what I say, Denny Hamlin was starting 25th. I believe he had a really fast race car. Let me double check real quick here and look at past. There's a lot of Bristol information in the spreadsheet at tinyurl.com/NASCAR18. A ton of information. I'm going to try to go through as much as possible, but everything you can possibly need right here. So Denny Hamlin finishes the race in, I'm sorry, now it's sorted by the wrong thing. I want to sort by finish, not starting position. There we go. So Hamlin finishes 14th. His average running position was 13th. He started 25th. Was he fast in practice? I didn't even load in all the practices correctly. Whatever. Don't have time for this. I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was. Why did I not load that in? I don't know. So anyway, so what happened? Denny Hamlin actually late in the race was leading. And the issue that we run into is, I think it was one of those, we got the tire on loose. And they went on the restart and he had to pit under caution. I'm pretty sure that was it. I think it was a loose lug nut while he was leading and he had to come down pit road, which is a nightmare at Bristol under a green flag. And that probably should have sealed his fate, but he got enough cautions to get back on the lead lap, but not enough to help the lineups that I had him in. So Hamlin raced, I'm pretty sure, a lot better than the results are showing here. Finished 3rd last fall at Bristol. I'd have to double check that. But see, the problem with those things where you get bad pit stops, they're not going to show up at racingreference.com. You're not going to see, I stepped on something in my foot, son of a bitch. You're not going to be able to see pit stops. I mean, all you can see are penalties and wrecks, and you can't see that, loose lug nut, guy had to come down. I wish they would put that on there. That would be really cool. But the only thing you can do is just try to memorize those moments as they happen during the race. So that's always fun. Clint Bowyer runs from 14th to 8th. Okay. When I look at that, I don't see anything exceptional. David Reagan runs average running position of 20th, starts 23rd, but he finishes 12th, which tells me that probably got pretty lucky on the last restarts. There's no way that David Reagan finishes 8 spots better than his average running position without catching some breaks there at the end. And yet he's still not in the optimal lineup. It's crazy. Joey Logano, I already mentioned before, he finished 9th, but started 10th. And that's pretty much where he ran the entire race. But what killed him was the TJ Majors issue where they came off pit road the wrong number. Clint Bowyer, which his spotter, Brett Griffin, it was also on door bumper clear, and he was on the opposite end. They were on the right spot at the end. And so Bowyer finished 5 spots better than his average running position. Austin Dillon starts 21st, finishes 15th. His average running position was 12th. Ran a little bit better probably than he was in the top 10 a good portion of the race. 76.8% of his laps were in the top 15. He was up running around with the up front. I remember that a little bit. Jamie McMurray, average running position 22nd, went from 31st to 19th. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure that McMurray had an issue too during the race. He did fine, but I want to say that he was doing better and another bad pit stop or something ruined his Bristol race. Daniel Suarez starts 12th, finishes 11th, runs 11th throughout the race. Really nothing exciting there. Bubba Wallace had a pretty good race. He started 20th, he finished 16th. His average running position, though, was 13th. You'll remember he led some laps during this race. He stayed out, and the Fox broadcast went, "Oh my God, how beautiful it is to watch that 43 car lead laps. It's an amazing thing." I don't even know where to begin. But he did run well, and he's a guy that I will definitely consider this week. It depends on what his price is. I'm not going to overpay by any means, but Bubba Wallace is cheap, which, you know, going with the cycles of pricing, the way that they go up, they go down, they go up, they go down, there's specific drivers that really fluctuate. Like Ricky Stenhouse Jr. fluctuates a lot because they just constantly, and we get this every year, there's guys that they just constantly misprice. And the thing is, those drivers are just mercurial to begin with. They have good races, they have bad races. People jump on them, you qualify last, so it shoots your ownership up 1 week. So then the next week, your price goes really high, and no one wants to pay for you, and you've got a pretty decent starting position, so no one plays you. So then your salary plummets. And Bubba Wallace is kind of in that situation, depending on what happens the week before, what his salary will be. So if Bubba Wallace is getting the cheap salary wave week, then yeah, he's definitely someone that I would consider. I mean, he ran well in this race. You don't really fluke your way. We've seen some people fluke their way through a Bristol race that has a lot of cautions. And believe you, this one did have a lot of cautions. And we saw a lot of good cars wreck out. So that is part of it. You probably shouldn't get too excited about a 16th place finish. But his average running position was 13th at Bristol, which, you know, in some ways, you're racing the track. And if you look at it from that perspective, for Bubba Wallace to have an average running position of 13th for a 500-lap race, if he's racing the track, that's a pretty good performance. Landon Castle, average running position 22nd, finishes 20th. Pretty much through attrition, gets a 20th place finish. That's going to happen. Someone is going to benefit in that way this weekend. And maybe two punts. And maybe the two punts works out in a Landon Castle, Bubba Wallace below 6,000. But I'm not going to hesitate if I think I can get two decent plays below 6,000. I'm not going to say, oh, these guys can never. They can. They can definitely get over 7x in value. And by saving that money, I can really key in on the hogs. I can key in on two hogs and get a place differential play. I'm definitely on board with that. That being said, that was not the play that worked in the first Bristol race. But in that first Bristol race, Kyle Larson was priced too low. Don't believe you're going to get Kyle Larson cheap again. You're probably going to get our three elite drivers who are pretty much living above 11,000. No matter what the track, the only place I think they're going to drop the price is if we're at a restrictor plate track. Other than that, Kevin Harvick is probably going to stay above 12,000 for the rest of the year. Kyle Busch should probably join him up there. And Martin Truex Jr. is always going to be probably the lower version, around 11 to 11.5 every single week. And at Bristol, they should price Kyle Larson in the 11,000 tier, I would. I don't see why you want it, considering the performance he had in the first Bristol race, how popular he is at these racetracks that have grooves near the wall. There just isn't a reason. The question then is, how detailed or how accurate is DraftKings when they design pricing? And I can see you now rolling your eyes and saying, they're not at all. They don't bring in a lot of factors when they create these pricing plans. And I don't even think in DraftKings they have a... I know with baseball, football, basketball, sports that are happening every single day, and you have a bunch of different contests, they have an algorithm. I don't believe they have a pricing algorithm for NASCAR. I don't. What I would speculate is that they look at the Vegas odds to win, and they kind of work off of that. They look at ownership, and they may look at track history. They look a little bit at current form. They're really not pulling in from a lot of data points. They aren't. They don't do that. And I think there's a manual guy that goes, well, we're at a road course. Let's push AJ up a little bit, or let's pull Ricky Stenhouse down a little bit. That's what I think happens. Again, I have no idea. I'm not there. I don't work that way. I'm not technically an employee of DraftKings. I'm just a freelance contractor, a hitman. No, I'm not a hitman. But I have no access to that, and I have no information. I have no knowledge, but that's what I believe. So with that, all that being said, I would believe that you should have to pay up for hogs this week, at least for the elite hogs. And from there, you're going to have to find a way to save money, which would push me towards a true punt, a Landon Castle, a Matt DiBenedetto, who has had sex. I think he's probably had sex. I mean, he's a man. But he's had success at Bristol in the past. And then maybe, you know, one of the in-betweeners, a Ty Dillon, a Bubba Wallace, a cheap 6K drive. It just depends on how the pricing. It could be a Trevor Bayne. I don't know if Trevor Bayne or Matt Kenseth is going to run this race, but we've seen Trevor Bayne priced 6,000 or lower in the past. We could get that pricing again. They got to let Trevor Bayne drive this race, don't they? He's a Knoxville guy. This is his home track. They gotta let Trevor Bayne go out there. Come on, Kenseth, take a week off, man. Brett Keselowski, 16.75 laps led points. 13.5 fast lap points. Average running position of 8th, finishes 23rd. I forgot all about this. There was a portion of the race where Brett Keselowski looked like a threat, and I had no exposure whatsoever to Brett Keselowski. And I was thinking, oh no. And then something broke in his car. Had which I'm surprised that there weren't more mechanical failures considering the weather and the changes. And they raced on Saturday and then parked the car completely and then raced again, or Saturday on Sunday and then raced on Monday. But Keselowski's day was ruined by that. Trevor Bayne, average running position of 24th, finishes 24th, but he started 33rd. Not bad. Decent play. You're going to save some money there. Doesn't work into the optimal because you got Landon Castle scoring more points and it's cheaper. Bubba Wallace scoring more points, probably the same price. David Reagan scoring more points and being cheaper. So clearly Trevor Bayne's not going to get in. Or A.J. Allmendinger, who his average position in this race is 20th. He finishes 17th. But not the home run that the other guys were, or as cheap as the other guys were. So then we'll go through. I'm not going to go into too much detail of your bottom 20 here. But yeah, Coil of Joy, Paul Menard, who has a good race. Average running position of 9th for Paul Menard. DFS-wise, he starts 7th, he finishes 13th, which means, yeah, that's not a good... Well, 26 fantasy points, but that doesn't work. And you wouldn't have played Paul Menard starting 7th. You gotta be crazy. You kidding me? So that didn't work. But he had a good race. Somebody to watch out for if he doesn't qualify too well. DiBenedetto, again, as I mentioned, he's good at this racetrack. The problem for him, I mean, look, LaJoy scored more points, Castle scored more points, and Reagan scored more points. Did they race better than him? No. Well, actually, Castle finished better. That's crazy how Landon Castle took the double zero car and finished better than DiBenedetto. That is unbelievable. But he did. DiBenedetto's average running position was 21st, and he finished his 21st. The problem was he started 24th, so he just couldn't score very many fantasy points. DiBenedetto's good at this racetrack, but not good enough. DJ Kennington only scored, what, 1 point less than him? Yay. Kennington, 35th to 27th. People are going to wreck. Kennington was a true punt that I went with a couple of them. We had the, remember the wreck, the bus wreck with the Canadian hockey team, and he had their logo on his car. A tragedy. William Byron starts 11th, finishes 18th, average running position of 15th. Not a good fantasy day, but look, William Byron, average running position of 5th. Alex Bowman, average running position of what, 8th or 9th. Jimmy Johnson finishes 3rd. Chase Elliott got caught in an early race wreck. The Hendrick Motorsports cars were really good at Bristol early in the season when the Hendrick Motorsports cars weren't very good. Now, one thing that helped was the aero not going to hurt you that much at Bristol. And this is before they had engine updates. This is before they had the chassis updates. Really am interested to see how Hendrick looks in practice this weekend. Can they do really any better is the question. Can William Byron probably can move up to around 10th. Alex Bowman maybe a spot or two. Jimmy Johnson, I just don't see him kicking Kyle Busch to the curb or surpassing Kyle Larson. Or, I mean, look, Martin Truex Jr. has been really good at Bristol the last couple years. He just didn't get the race because he got caught in a wreck early on. Ryan Blaney was really fast at Bristol. He got wrecked. Kevin Harvick had to start from the end. What happens if Kevin Harvick starts in the top 5? We've seen what he can do this year. Ty Dillon ends up with his average running position was 29th. He finished 28th, but Ty Dillon got caught in an early race wreck that put him 17 laps down. And then from here on, it's going to be guys that are way, way, way down. Reed Sorensen, I think he got caught up in a wreck, and he's also Reed Sorensen. Chad Fincham, Tennessee native, driving a Carl Long car, though. Probably don't want to race. I mean, Chad Fincham is scary to roster in the Xfinity. He is... you're a lunatic if you're rostering him in Cup. So then you got Ryan Blaney, 36.5 hog points, but he got caught in a wreck early. And I think the rest of these guys, so 30 through 40, all wrecked. That's remarkable. That is unbelievable. They are Blaney, Gaulding, Truex, Jones, Rhodes, Busch, Elliott, Buescher, Chastain, Kane, and McDowell. All of them wrecked. All of them wrecked pretty early. Man, that can't be right. Why is it showing Ryan Blaney having an average running position of 2nd? That's not right. How is that right? That can't be right. Because he didn't even finish most of the race. I got to look at that. Oh, wow. That's a glitch. NASCAR released a glitch in their stats. So if you look at Ryan Blaney's, I went to Racing Reference just to double check this. Because on my spreadsheet, I've got Ryan Blaney with an average running position of 2nd. Well, that's stupid because Ryan Blaney wrecked, I think, within the first 100 laps. That means he ran 400 laps in 30th, 38th, 40th place. There's no way you're averaging 2nd. Well, technically, he ran 117 laps. He ran 117 laps. How could his average running position be 2nd, NASCAR? His driver rating is 93.3. So apparently, they messed up. Percentage of laps led. So Kyle Busch led 23% of the laps. Kyle Larson led 40% of the laps. And Ryan Blaney led 85% of the laps. No, he didn't. That's not what happened. So I guess they stopped collecting his data for some reason when he wrecked out. Just a glitch. So that's weird. There's nothing I can do about that one in my spreadsheet. So don't come at me with that one. That's a NASCAR failure with the data, which really, I don't know. Does NASCAR have to keep a lot of stats? I really don't think they do. I mean, you compare it to baseball, but there's so many stats and so many numbers that baseball releases every single day. This is once a damn week. You'll probably get it right. Whatever. All right. So, where should I go from here? Just end it? I'll go a little bit more in. How about we look at the Dover optimal lineup? Because Dover is a lot like Bristol, and Dover is a little bit more recent. Your Dover optimal lineup is Kevin Harvick, who starts the race 2nd, wins the race, and scores a lot of hog points. 153 fantasy points overall. Brad Keselowski. Here's old Brad Keselowski again. Keep your eye on Brad. Look at the brain on Brad. Clint Boyer, 8,800. He starts 12th. He finishes 2nd. Then you got Daniel Suarez. This is the week that Daniel Suarez cheated, by the way. I think I've reminded you of that one a couple of times. And then you've got your two value plays that come through. Kasey Kahne, A.J. Allmendinger. Kasey Kahne starts 25th, finishes 17th. A.J. Allmendinger starts 28th, finishes 21st. Really not that remarkable. 35 points and 30 points, but they give you enough savings that you could roster Kevin Harvick at 11,000, Brad Keselowski at 10,400, Clint Boyer at 8,800, and Daniel Suarez at 7,001. It doesn't seem like a very impressive lineup, but there it is. That was the Dover optimal lineup. Seems weird. You would say, well, where's Kyle Busch? Where's Kyle Larson? Where's all those guys? Not in that lineup. That's where they are. I can't even remember what happened to those guys. Kyle Busch finished the race. He didn't have it, if I remember correctly. He had an issue the whole race. He ends up wrecking anyway. He was missing something that week. And what about Kyle Larson? Why did Kyle Larson not perform? I don't know. I can't remember what happened there either. I need to look that up. But, yeah, I think it was all Kevin Harvick all day on that one. So it goes. Anything else? Practice-wise, I don't really care that much about looking at the practice. Why would I say that? Well, look, you're going to know who's good. I don't even know if I need to look at the numbers. If I just watch it on screen, you're going to say, yeah, this is the guy to beat. And the teams are usually pretty open about it. And then from there, it's just guys that get place differential and guys that avoid the wrecks. You look at, I don't know, let's just look at the last couple years Bristol-wise to close out and say, oh, was that a surprise or not a surprise? So if I look at last fall, Kyle Busch scored the most points. Was that a surprise? No, it wasn't a surprise. He started 2nd. He started 18th. Kyle Busch starting 18th fast in practice. Of course, he's going to score a bunch of points. Kyle Busch at Bristol. Eric Jones starts on the pole and he scores the 2nd most points. I faded Eric Jones and I have been mad at myself ever since. It was not the smart move. I did not believe in Eric Jones. But I have been sure to remind myself that the number one pit stall and starting in the preferred groove at Bristol is an enormous advantage. And I will not make that mistake again. Eric Jones scored a lot of points. Yeah, Kevin Harvick starting 29th, scoring 3rd most points again. Was Kevin Harvick that great last year? No, but when Kevin Harvick starts 29th, load up. Kyle Larson scores 40 hog points for the 4th most fantasy points. Again, not a surprise. He was starting the race 2nd. Load on up on Kyle Larson. Kurt Busch started 25th. He finished 5th. Not that crazy. You got Matt Kenseth, 5th to 4th, 14 hog points. Denny Hamlin, 7th to 3rd, 11 hog points. Trevor Bayne, 28th to 7th. Not a bad play. Don't love it, but he does like racing at his home track. Jimmy Johnson starting 21st. We know that he's been good at Bristol and Dover. Ryan Newman, 13th to 6th. This looks like some pretty familiar names. Paul Menard starting 27th, drives to 16th. Not that crazy. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., 12th most fantasy points, 14th to 14th, but he gets 8.5 fast lap points. And we talked about that before. You're going to pencil him in for 10 fast lap points. As long as he gets a top 15 and doesn't lose place differential points, probably fine. Let's look at the spring race. Kyle Larson, 57 hog points. Martin Truex Jr., 72 hog points. Larson finished 6th, Truex finished 8th. You may say, wait a second, you didn't say Truex in the fall race. Truex had a wheel situation, had to come down pit road under green, got hit with a penalty while he went under pit road under green, putting like 4 or 5 laps down. That was game over for Martin Truex Jr. You back to the spring race, he was fine. Jimmy Johnson, 3rd most fantasy points, 40 hog points, wins the race. Did he deserve to win the race? I don't know. Who deserves anything? Kyle Larson and Martin Truex Jr. both got hit with penalties that forced them to the back of the field late in the race. That left the race to Jimmy Johnson. He wins it. Joey Logano, 32 hog points, starts 5th, finishes 5th. Would have had a better finish this spring, but you'll remember, came off pit road in the wrong spot. There's Matt Kenseth again. Eric Jones was good last year. Now, Eric Jones is in that 20 car that was pretty strong in the past. Eric Jones did not perform well this year because he got wrecked. Kevin Harvick, 10 to 3rd, and he gets 11 or 12 Hulk points. Clint Bowyer, 9th to 2nd. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in the spring race, 19th to 9, 6.5 fast lap points. But you said he's going to have a 10-point floor. Every race that Ricky Stenhouse Jr. runs at Bristol, he's going to come a little bit better. There's going to be progress. If you look at the numbers, 6.5 last spring, almost 10 last fall, and then 10 in the spring. I think he's going to continue to get better and better. There were times in that spring race where I thought, man, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. might win this Bristol race. Austin Dillon, 21st to 13th. Don't sleep on Austin Dillon. He ran well this spring. I know Austin Dillon has had a terrible year, and I'm the first person to call out Austin Dillon. But I'm also the first person to say, hey, no, this guy is good at this racetrack. He can run well here. And since I am a self-described Austin Dillon hater, if I am very tough on the guy, when I say this is probably a week where you should trust him, then you probably should listen to me. Right? It pains me. It doesn't pain me. I'm not really an Austin Dillon hater. But I'm very tough. I'm very critical. I watch the guy a lot. I pay attention to what he does. And that means I also know when he does well. Chase Elliott, 2nd to 7th. Negative place differential points. But he did get 8.5 fast lap points. Paul Menard, 26th to 16th. Paul Menard didn't run poorly in this year's spring race. Paul Menard just started inside the top 10, which makes him very difficult to play. Very difficult. Almost impossible. You say, but what if he hangs on? It doesn't matter if he hangs on, because there's going to be other guys in his price range that get positive place differential points. If he starts 7th, he's not going to finish 2nd. He's not going to. Ryan Newman, at the same price point, starting 15th, can move forward. Paul Menard can't. But Paul Menard's been good at this racetrack. If we can get him in a good starting position, then sure, why not? Ty Dillon, 24th to 15th. Got to be careful, though. That was 2016 when it was a different Ty Dillon. Just a totally different guy. A totally different team. Sophomore slump, however you want to chalk it up, by the way. He did get in the wreck this year that ruined his race, but be careful. Matt DiBenedetto, there he is, 32nd to 19th. Would love to be able to play Matt DiBenedetto if he starts in the 32nd spot. Love it. Sign me up. All aboard. Suarez, 23rd to 18. It wasn't bad at Dover. It wasn't bad at Bristol this year either. Suarez probably on my radar. Eric Jones, 14th to 17th. 12 fast lap points, too, for Mr. Jones in that race. And he took that to the next level when he scored, what, 25, 30, 40, 40, I think, fast lap points in the fall race. Jimmy McMurray, 8th to 12, 7.5 fast lap points. Trevor Bayne, 12th to 11th. Trevor Bayne likes to run at his home track. Cole Witt, 31 to 21, and Ryan Newman, 13 to 4. I'm repeating a lot of the same names here. Some of these guys are good at Bristol. Let's keep going. Kevin Harvick, 24th to 1st, tons of hog points, 60 of them. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., 25th to 2nd. I remember this was a Wreckfest Bristol race. Whatever, it doesn't matter. He got 8.5 fast lap points, folks. Go ahead and pencil in Ricky Stenhouse Jr. for 10 points when you're doing your projections. Kyle Busch, 94 hog points. And he drives 3rd to 39th. Must have gotten a late race wreck. Don't really remember. Whatever. That was back when, yeah, man, he was burning people left and right. I remember this one. And he comes on the broadcasters. I hate Bristol. You know, when they ground down the top groove and messed this track up, and I've never won here. They got rid of the Progressive Bank. He used to badmouth Bristol all the time. All the time. And he did. He had a streak where he was really good, would look good in the race, and just screw it up every time since they've ground down the Progressive Banking. And then he won that fall race last year, and then he won the spring race this year. And I guess they didn't sign the divorce papers, and Kyle Busch is, you know, living with Bristol again. There's probably a lot of women named Bristol. I don't know. There's probably people listening to this podcast that have named their kids Bristol, unfortunately. That's not a good name, guys. That's not a good look. Don't name your kids after racetracks. Don't name your kids after race cars. Don't name your kids after race car drivers. Don't do it. Don't. But it's okay to name them after American Indians. I think I'm totally cool with that. Tecumseh, it's a kick-ass name. You name your kid Tecumseh, I'm on board with that. I might trying to pitch that one. It's not going over so well. But I'm going to keep fighting the good fight. I'm trying to get that one set there. Yeah, you got William Tecumseh Sherman. You got Tecumseh. It's a good name. I'll keep trying though. All right, we're at the 60-minute mark. I don't know if I need to add any more. You should have a pretty good idea going into this week. Like, yeah, these are the guys that usually go to do well at Bristol. And I know I need to make sure I absolutely nail the hogs. And you can see the exact hog data numbers. Let me flip this up. Might as well just go over these numbers real quick just to show you how important it is. So on average, the driver with the most hog points averages, these are not just total points, these are hog points, 85 hog points. The best score at Bristol on average has 85 hog points. So whatever place differential, throw that in there. And whatever finishing position points, go ahead and throw those on top as well. 85. You got to get the number one hog. I mean, you got to get the number one hog everywhere. This is where it's even crazier. The second place fantasy driver, not the second place driver, but the driver number two on the DFS scoreboard, averages 63 hog points. So you got to have him too. I mean, we usually need to get hog number one and two in GPPs and in cash. It's a huge. Number three. Now, you could maybe start getting away with these guys, but I doubt it because the third place driver has 36 hog points on average. The fourth driver has 28 hog points on average. I don't believe on average, though, that you can roster one, two, three, and four. You couldn't. That's a good question. I'm going to look at that here in a second, guys. Why the hell not? And then, I mean, it goes 85, 62, 36, 28, 19, 14, 11, 9, 8, 6, 6, 4, 4. Those numbers matter, especially when they're coming from mid-range and value drivers. Let me see. So, in terms of hogs and lineups, you could get hog number one in your lineup. You could get hog number two in your lineup. What about number three? Number three was Ryan Blaney, so you didn't want him because he ended up all those negative place differential points. You could have afforded him, though, if he didn't have a bad day. But if he doesn't have a bad day, the whole damn thing changes, whatever. What about number four? Number four was not in the optimal lineup. That was Brad Keselowski. He wasn't in the optimal lineup either, but that's because he got a bunch of negative place differential points because he messed up. Number five was in your lineup. That was Ricky Stenhouse Jr. with 15 hog points. What about number six? Jimmy Johnson. So you had hog one, hog two, hog five, hog six. Hell. And that's pretty interesting. Let's look at the numbers for last fall's race. So you had, I don't have the optimal lineup in front of me though, but you had hog one and two. What about hog three? Kyle Larson, I bet you were able to squeeze him into the lineup. I guarantee you had to because he, I bet you did. I bet you had hog one, two, and three. From there, I'm not so sure. All right, we'll look at last spring. You had hog one, you had hog two. I doubt you're able to afford hog three. I doubt you're able to afford hog four. I probably could look up the optimal lineups. They're in a Google Drive folder somewhere, but don't have that in front of me, so who cares? Hog one, hog two, probably not hog three. It's close. I think if you get hog one and two, you're probably doing fine. Probably doing fine. Maybe if you can get three in, that's cool. But it looks like it's going to be one, two. Get you some place differential in there. Get you some value. Because hogs one and two are almost always expensive, except for the year where Eric Jones, last fall, where Eric Jones scored a bunch of points. But if hog one and two are very expensive, then you're probably not likely going to get hog number three. Unless, of course, hog number three is really cheap. But so it goes. Watching Ricky Stenhouse Jr. spin out right here, but save it, and somehow everybody misses him. How many times has Ricky Stenhouse Jr. spun out and wrecked this year? It's got to be 30. It's got to be. I hope I've made your breast. I mean, look, if I was going to build a lineup right now, just to close it out, I mean, it's kind of dumb to do, but Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson will be on the top of my list. I would put Ricky Stenhouse Jr. in there. I don't think they're going to price him correctly. I know Ricky Snaps, you're, oh, man, that's crazy. Well, I'm trying to win a damn GPP here, folks. Give me Ryan Newman as well. Maybe Austin Dillon. I don't know. That just popped in my head in that same price range. Paul Menard's fine as well, but I would think that Paul Menard qualifies in a decent spot that really limits him. Maybe Blaney is somebody I'm thinking about here. If I'm looking at three hogs, I probably, I guess, as I think about it, Larson and Bush are going to be expensive. But I get a feeling that there's going to be an $8,000 hog. You know, I'm missing Breck's ask. You know, that's a really interesting way to go in GPPs because I'm automatically going Larson and Bush. That should be popular. Maybe other people will go with Harvick in a way and Truex in a way. But you know where we're not going? It's Brakoslowski. And you look at the last couple of years at Bristol, Brakoslowski's been good. So that is an interesting angle to go to in GPPs is to work Brakoslowski into it. It's expensive. There's no way you're going to be able to afford Larson, Bush, and Keselowski. It's not happening. That's double punt. That just doesn't seem optimal. So then you got to make a sacrifice on Larson or Bush. Or if you're going Harvick or Truex, one of those big guys, that is a very tough decision that not very many people are going to want to make. It's interesting. You get really low ownership on Brakoslowski, and he has pretty good history if he just doesn't have some sort of mechanical failure. Still don't love it, though. I go Larson, I go Bush, and then give me Stenhouse, give me a punt. I don't care who it is. So it's Larson, Sten. And these numbers probably going to work. I hope people are like, oh, man, he gave out a lineup. This guy, report him. That's violating community guidelines. I can't even see the salaries, folks. They're not available. I'm making the lineup way in advance. So if I go Larson, Bush, and that's probably around, let's just say they're 11,000 each. That's 22,000. Let's throw in Stenhouse, and I'll price Stenhouse at 7,000. How do you say about 7? So I'm at 29,000 now. Give me DiBenedetto, and we'll say DiBenedetto is 5,500. Is that fair? So now I am at 34,500, and that leaves me two picks left, and I have, 13,500 left? 13,500? No. Yeah, I got 13,500 for two picks. Give me Newman, and we'll say Newman is 7,500. So now I am up to 42. That gives me 8,000. I got 8,000 left. Now I'm just making these numbers up. I don't have them in front of me, guys. Someone's inevitably going to listen to this podcast on Saturday or Friday and say, your numbers are wrong, you idiot. Well, I'm doing this beforehand, and someone's going to listen to it beforehand, and they're going to say on Monday, how's he know the salaries? I don't. I'm just making them up. I'm just using general, this is what these guys average at. And then someone's going to say, he's giving out lineups again. I probably shouldn't even do that. I should leave the last guy empty. Well, we'll do something. Anyway, so 8,000. I wish I could go a little bit more because with 8,000, that's Almirola range, which is fine if he's a place differential play. It's probably not quite enough for Blaney. And I would really like Blaney to slide in there. So, what I could do, it's just crazy, I'm pretending to say, so what, like, say just get rid of DiBenedetto, we go with just a straight, pure punt, like a landing castle. Castle will probably be around 5,000. That'll give me another $500, and I could get Blaney. I could say Larson, Bush, Stenhouse, Castle, Newman, Blaney, if Blaney can get some fast lap points. Now, that's basically the lineup that just hit. So what the hell would the odds be that the lineup that worked in the spring, nearly the only thing that I'm changing is I'm putting in Blaney instead of, what, Jimmy Johnson? That is the only, I took Jimmy Johnson out and put in Blaney. And I probably could afford Jimmy Johnson in that lineup as well. There's no way that the pretty much, like, yeah, that's a fish move, isn't it? I pretty much just built the same lineup. Maybe take Stenhouse out and put in Austin Dillon. You might be able to get lower ownership there, right? I can switch out and put in Austin Dillon. Or I can switch out Newman and put in Menard. Or I can switch out Blaney and maybe I can go to... I don't really love going with Eric Almirola. Maybe in the 8,000 range, I could go with... I don't know if there's any way. I could go down to Suarez... I don't see him leading laps. I don't see him... You know, you can tinker around with it. I mean, this is really pointless because I can't see starting position. I haven't seen any practice. I'm just going on who's been good. And then still at the end of the day, it's just hoping that those guys don't wreck. 10 really good cars wrecked in the spring race. None of those guys wreck, which means, statistically, they're due for a wreck at Bristol. That's going to do it. Triple Light's fantastic.